It's live expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Elise Glink Show. Live on Sundays here, 11 to 1. On News Talk WSB, our number, 404-872-0750. We're going to open up the phone lines and let you call in and join us today. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time. The website, thinkglink.com. thinkglink.com. Join us online. Sign up for the free weekly newsletter. If you're not following me on Twitter, you should. I've already started tweeting. You're going to miss half the conversation. At Glink. At G-L-I-N-K. If you retweet during the show, make sure you use at Glink or the hashtag Rebuilding America, because that is what we're doing. Every week, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Now, last week, I talked a little bit about my concept of Rebuilding America. We are on the precipice here, right? We had one quarter of contraction, admittedly, barely a contraction, but I'm concerned, you know. Sequestration is coming up this week, right? It's Friday, the 1st. March 1st is finally here, and we've kicked this can so far down the road that it's now the end of the road, or at least it's the end of the road until Congress decides that it's not the end of the road. But anyway, Tuesday, I'm going to be filling in for Eric Erickson during Atlanta's Evening News, and we're going to be talking about it. So 5 to 7 Tuesday, be there, be square. But anyway, Rebuilding America. So last week we talked about how it's this idea that you have to reclaim ownership over your personal finances, for better or for worse, right? Richer or poorer, you own your personal finances. If you don't own them, reclaim ownership of it. Your financial home, you're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to rebuild your own America. It's about this idea of reclaiming ownership of your small business, of your own. You know, I always joke that we're the CEO of our own personal economy, right, at your house. Well, that's what that is. Now, if you own a business on top of it, it's also about reclaiming ownership over that. It's about, you know, selling and buying the best home that you can truly afford, right? But not beyond that. In fact, this week I spent a lot of time talking about underbuying, this concept that I really believe in. And if you go back to the very first book I wrote in 1994, 100 Questions Every First-Time Homebuyer Should Ask, that book has had three editions, and in each of them, and in all of my home buying books, I talk about this concept of underbuying. It's not about buying on sale, although God knows you can do that right now. It's about spending less than you can afford simply to give yourself some comfort room. And I started talking about this back in 1993, 94, right? I mean, that's a really long time ago. That's 20 years ago. It's when I first started writing my syndicated column. That's going to have its 20th anniversary this year. So rebuilding your slice of the American dream means rebuilding and reclaiming ownership over your personal finances, over your financial home, over your small business, over the actual house that you live in. And if you don't rebuild your slice of the American dream, and all your neighbors don't work on rebuilding theirs, blocks don't get better, neighborhoods don't get better, communities don't get better, cities don't get better, and the country doesn't get better. So one house at a time, right? The five Rebuilding America rules, I'm going to just quickly go over them again today. We're going to get to your calls at 404-872-0750. But these are so important. These are so important, right? You've got to get yourself to ground zero. It's about being honest about where you are, whether or not you have a job, whether you're in foreclosure or you have to do a short sale, wherever you are, being honest about what your ground zero is and getting there. Number two, taking the pain now. We have kicked this can so far down the road, right? Look at our deficit. Look at the budget. Look what's going on with the economy. Oh, my gosh, Europe, this week, the news in Europe, they're going to be in another contraction for as far as anybody can see. It's going to be years before they get out of it. Great Britain was just downgraded. Take the pain now. Don't kick that can. It's bad enough the country's kicking the can. Don't you do it with your own financial house. Make strategic decisions, not emotional decisions. Right? You got to be thinking ahead two or three steps. Everything is like a chess game, right? You got to look ahead. Understand what the decision you make today is going to do in the future. It's like when you buy and sell property. You make an offer, but you have to know that whatever offer you make is going to produce one of three reactions. You have to understand what those reactions and responses are going to be from the seller or buyer, and then when you respond, what that's going to be and how you're going to respond to that response. Yes, life is like a game. Understood. Number four, again, underbuy rather than overbuy. Just give yourself some comfort. Give yourself some room. And finally, don't sign anything, until you read every single word of it and understand it. So when I say one house at a time, we understand the Rebuilding America concept now. What do I mean when I say one house at a time, right? It's about you. Your foundation, your emotional foundation, your financial foundation. So is your job secure? Is your house safe? Is your family safe? And do you know what you need to be happy? So I spent some time talking about this whole idea of happiness this week because for so many people, money is the root of their happiness, and it's totally messed up, right? Money should never be the root of anybody's happiness. It may, certainly people who have money are happy, but people who have money are really unhappy too. And anybody who believes that money is going to make them happy has got everything all twisted up, right? Because money doesn't make you happy. Here's the secret that I have found over these years to being happy. It's being content with what you have and not what you think you should have. Or what your neighbor has, or what you used to have before the recession and lost and no longer have, or, and this is a really tough point for so many people, what your children have, even if you're the one who gave it to them. Now, there is not a week that goes by where I don't hear somebody say, wow, I wish I was my own parent. Well, yes, wouldn't that be great? I wish I was my own parent too. But that doesn't happen. You can't be jealous of what somebody else has, or you're never going to be happy with what you have. It's just not going to work, right? It's logic. This isn't like some great psychological underpinning. This is about where you are in your life and thinking to yourself, this is good. Do you ever just take a step back and say, this is good? This is amazingly good? I think you should. I try to do it at least a couple of times a week because life is moving so fast and it's really so easy to get caught up in this game of more, more, more. And we got caught up in that in 2002 and 2003 and 2004 where it was like more was better. Bigger house was better. Making more money on the house was better. More, more, more. And you have to take yourself back from that. And you have to be happy with what you have every day of the year. And if you're not, that mountain just gets so much higher and so much harder to climb. And if you look at it, that's how it is for so many people. That's why the one house at a time thing, and we're starting with yours, is such a difficult concept. You have to be happy with what you have. Your four walls, your ceiling, your floor is great because it's yours and you can afford it. And you don't have to worry about losing it. That's the spot that I want you in. That's the comfort zone. That's how we rebuild our lives. It is. And after all these years, I get wanting to do better. I want to do better. I want to do better for my kids. But I'm also perfectly happy with what I have, and I have been for a really long time. I have a relatively new friend who came into my life, and honestly, I joke that he is the ultimate American consumer. He is constantly buying stuff, all kinds of stuff, and it's stuff that I would never even imagine that anybody could even want. I mean, you know, it's just his own particular things. And I find it so amusing. And he looks at me and he's like, you've got all your employees who are in their 20s worried about retirement. I said, yes, right. Because I think about that every day because I want to feel safe and secure. I want to know my financial house is in order. I look at my numbers. I look at my credit card statements. I do everything that I tell you to do. In fact, when I was on the Oprah Winfrey show in, I don't remember the last time, whatever it was, her producers came out and they're like, really? This is how you live? Can we go to Walmart with you and see how you shop? I said, sure. And they did. They followed me around all day long. And her producers were like, wow, this is a revelation. You do what you preach. It's not that tough. Be happy with what you have and you'll rebuild your house. And then that will translate to your block and your neighborhood and your city and the country. And we'll be in much better shape. 404-872-0750. It's 1117. Let's go to the phones. David joins us on the line from Tucker. Hey, David.
Hi. Speaking along the lines you're talking about, I don't know if you've been catching it, but there's a PBS series on the Rockefellers that's been running.
Oh, I haven't. What is it talking about?
Well, basically, I mean, the problems they had were occasionally peculiar to being that well off, but I remember John D. Rockefeller paraphrasing him was that friends are more valuable than money.
Because, so true.
At various points in his life, he was either incredibly admired or incredibly despised or sometimes both. And the different problems that the family had because they had wealth issues. One was talking about the strain the second generation had of giving away the money.
Well, it sounds ridiculous to say that, but it is a real responsibility. And if you look at how Bill and Melinda Gates have done it, there you can say what you want about Microsoft Office 13, but the truth is that they have tried to be as thoughtful as they could, and no matter all the good that they've done in the world, they take huge amounts of criticism for decisions they make or they don't make. But I'll go back to what I've been saying all day, which is that you got to be happy with what you have.
And the Rockefellers had, you know, family issues just like everybody has family issues. That doesn't seem to really change that much.
That's for sure.
The question here, I've been hearing, you know, that home prices starting to go up a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and people talking about, well, now there's a more of a market, and I haven't seen any of the numbers that indicate that all this backlog of properties has been sold anywhere. Is there a shadow inventory? Is this just a blip? What's the situation?
Well, thank you, David. It's a great question. So in Atlanta, which is still among the worst hit for foreclosures, we're still seeing a lot of foreclosure notices. The supply and demand ratio is still a little bit out of balance, but turning. And there are some neighborhoods where homes are selling in bidding wars. I don't know that it's getting to a place where, I mean, 49% of Atlantans, is the last number I saw this week, are still underwater with their mortgages, right? The houses are worth less than the mortgages they hold. So it isn't feeling much better to folks in Atlanta. But if you go to places like San Francisco or Boston or D.C. or, well, to a lesser extent in Michigan, you are starting to see prices come off the bottom. Phoenix had a 20% growth in prices, but, you know, like in Michigan, property was selling for like $1,500 a piece. So it's not hard when you get rid of all that very low-hanging property to see prices jump up significantly. The question about where we are with the backlog is interesting because the backlog of inventory has been sopped up to some degree, and we're seeing a very relatively low amount of inventory on the market in some neighborhoods, not so much so in Atlanta, but it is turning, and I think you should watch. I think you're going to see it go turn even faster a little bit later in this year. We have to take a short break. I'm Elise Link. Stay tuned. We are rebuilding America one house at a time here on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Link is live and here to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Got a black magic woman.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time. Let's start with yours. It's time for Real Estate Insight with Rhonda Duffy. Welcome back, Rhonda.
Thanks.
So what do you think makes, when you got a short sale inspection, what do you do about that at the time of binding?
Well, a lot of agents will say, well, I don't want to have my buyer spend any money before, you know, the bank approves a short sale. And our position has always been, as well as many other top agents, you have been the number one short sale agent now 2 years in a row. We've done hundreds of transactions. But what we've learned is a buyer who sits around and waits on a bank, who's twiddling their hands, and, you know, they could either be 30 days or 6 months, for a buyer to wait that long, the interest rates change, the inventory changes, and what these buyers are left with is an approval from the bank and then a house they don't want, right? Because it's more in repairs than what they thought, or they figure out something about the house that, you know, they don't like. So my point has always been, look, buyers, do your investigative work at the time of binding. That way you know if you want the house or not. You know, probably about 40% of our short sales, they don't go to fruition after the due diligence after binding. In other words, the buyer exits after binding.
So when that happens, or I should say for the buyer's point of view, you know, you're spending the money up front is kind of what you're saying, rather than where you would normally spend it in the process. Is it wasted money? Because I think that's the question everybody would ask.
Well, they feel like it's wasted until you really start to think about this. You've got yourself tied into a contract on a wait-and-see game, right? Mm-hmm. And like I said, inventory changes, interest rates change, your desire changes. It would be better to know that what you're waiting on is worth it, right? So I know it's a different standpoint, but as soon as we started doing this, we found that our deals work smoother. The lenders love the fact that the buyer's into the deal, right?
Right.
And it just makes the whole transaction much easier for everyone.
Well, easier is better when it comes to short sales.
Oh, my gosh.
Goes without saying.
Right.
I assume you've got more of this on your blog?
Of course, RhondaDuffy.com.
All right, check it out, everybody. This has been Real Estate Insight with Rhonda Duffy. See you next week.
See you next week.
All right, I'm Elise Kling. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more on News Talk WSB.
Wait a minute, baby. Stay with me a while.
It's 11:36 on News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Kling. This is the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours. Here on News Talk WSB, our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time. Having a really interesting conversation with one of our regular listeners who's in Britain, Great Britain, tuning in this afternoon for him, this morning for us, listening to the show, and agreeing with me. This is what you get if you're on Twitter, right? If you're following me on Twitter, you're part of this conversation. He's a UK business owner, and he thinks that the UK will be in this climate of depression, his word, it's certainly recession, for the next 3 years as things get streamlined. He also said he thinks America, he's an American expat. I think American politicians forget they were voted in for a reason, and that was to support their people. But I think that's just something that happens with politicians all over the world, of all stripes, truly. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter. There is all kinds of cool stuff going on. Great content in the ThinkLink community. We had a bunch of CBS front page stories this weekend. We've been CBSNews.com. Some really interesting stuff going on with the mortgage market. And then, of course, over the Equifax Finance blog. Great stuff there. Really great. You should check that out. Blog.equifax.com. And then also Yahoo. A bunch of homepage stories there as well. So if you don't want to go to like 10 different websites to see the content, just sign up for the newsletter each week, because that gives you kind of the list of all the different pieces of content we're publishing and where they are, and you just link from there. Okay, 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Lori joins us on the line from Woodstock. Hey, Lori.
Hi, Elise. How are you?
I'm good. What's going on in your world?
We have a house that we're trying to sell, and it's a house that's apart from our residence that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
The home is been refurbished. We gutted it and put it on the market, and have had an issue with appraisals on it. The first contract we had was with HUD, a buyer from HUD, and there's no comparables in this particular market for a fair appraisal to be done, is what we're kind of finding out is happening. And we now have a second contract on the house for about the same price, and this is conventional. And again, we're finding that there's, and this has all been within a 30-day span.
Uh-huh.
How do we get a fair appraisal?
Well, you don't want a fair appraisal. You want an appraisal that supports the price of the property.
Correct.
But that may not be a fair appraisal.
Correct.
So, I mean, let's call a spade a spade. You don't really care what other homes have sold for or are selling for in the area. You want sales that support your home price. And unfortunately, what people are willing to pay, which some would argue is the market value. You've got two people who want to pay that, but banks are not willing to take that risk. So unless you want to finance those sellers at that price, which you probably can't do, you have to rely on what other homes you're selling for in the area.
But what if there's no comparables? Can you take a home that has been completely gutted except for the walls and the roof? Everything new.
You built a white elephant. You built a white elephant. You did so much to the house that you got too far ahead of the neighborhood. And that may be...
Not necessarily.
Well, but Lori, what else has sold that supports that price? Nothing.
New homes in the area.
Right, but you're not a new home. You're not in a new home subdivision. So you could, when the appraiser comes through, you can make the case, and you can stand there with the appraiser and say, hey, this home is like new. And we compare ourselves to these other new home communities that are just down the street, if they truly are down the street. And the appraiser can say, okay, but your foundation is 55 years old and theirs is 5 minutes old. And you'll have to say, well, that's true. And they'll say, you know, those subdivisions are all new homes, and you're next to this neighborhood that's not as nice as where you are. And he could say to you that nobody's going to make that comparison for you.
Then why would we talk to one lender and say their appraiser can use this, and another lender would say we can't?
Because lenders are all different, and the requirements for loans are different. And sometimes you get a lender who's willing to portfolio the loan, and so they will allow a different set of appraisal standards and different rules because they don't care. They're going to keep the property in their own investment portfolio. But if everybody's, 90% plus of loans are turned around and sold to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and FHA,
right,
and those standards are so high now and so ridiculous, I'm not saying they're not ridiculous. I'm just saying your expectation that you can change the rules of the game so it suits you is maybe a little outsized and not going to happen. And so, unfortunately, what seems to be happening is a mismatch, because even though prices are rising and even though these foreclosures have been sopped up, those are the prices that are on the books. And so appraisers are being forced to live by what homes are actually selling for, as opposed to what sellers want them to be selling for, even if people are willing to pay that price. Lenders have taken back billions and billions of dollars in bad mortgages for properties that looked like they should have been worth more but weren't. In fact, I wrote this week for Money Watch about a brand new study where these two professors went back and actually looked at the properties of homes that had gotten owner occupancy mortgages, but in fact turned out to be rentals, and the lenders never checked, and those buyers got cheaper loans that maybe they can more easily afford, but it wasn't, they were resold as being something they weren't. It was fraud.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, this is why lenders, and that's, we're talking hundreds of billions of dollars, maybe even $1 trillion. And so lenders are being really tough, and you know, you're, what you're finding is the harsh reality of the market hasn't caught up yet to where you are. And it doesn't just leapfrog back to where you want it to be, right? It doesn't go from 100,000 to 250 just because all the 100,000 homes are sold.
Correct.
So that's what you're discovering, is that you've now built a $200,000 home, let's say, in a neighborhood of $150,000 homes, and it's not appraising out in value.
To say that, I mean, the home is not, it's very well priced within. I mean, most of the homes that are around it are more expensive homes.
Then why can't the appraisal appraise out? Because those expensive homes haven't sold yet, or in the last 3 months, which is all any appraiser cares about right now. Because
right.
The bank regulations say it has to have sold in the last 3 to 4 months, or it's useless. You can't look at homes that sold in 2006,
right.
Because those are all like fake numbers.
Right. We understand that.
Right.
I mean,
so what sold like last year, a year ago, or 2 years ago, maybe isn't relevant either. And in the new rules and regulations, this is what it says. And so I'm on your side, Lori. You get two people who come to you with a contract for basically the same price. The market is telling you that house is worth that, but lenders don't care.
What if you have a contract that is very well qualified in putting a large amount of money down to buy this home, where the lender has very little liability?
You would have to find a lender that's going to hold the loan in its portfolio. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are really particular about what those appraisals have to say these days. And they're not going to take it.
I see.
So, you know, somebody comes in with 50% down?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll lend the damn money. Right? I mean, I'll lend it. You'll lend it.
You'll
go find the money, because 50% down is like they don't need the money. So then a lender's going to be interested. Not anybody who's selling to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. But somebody else who's going to keep it in their portfolio. So what you might want to do is go around to a local or regional lender, and you might want to say, hey, if we can get somebody with 30, 40, 50% down, are you going to help finance this, and see what they say? That's the only thing you can do other than lending the money yourself. I don't know how else you're gonna work it, because...
Got it.
And
got
I
it.
Wish I could change the world for you. Believe me, there's a million other people listening to the show who are like, please change the world for me too, Elise. And I wish I could.
It just, you know, the system is so far out of whack to me. That, you know, it's hard to be fair with everybody.
It is, but what is out of whack, right? So what, I mean, if you are thinking about it, if it wasn't your house, okay, let's just take you and your house out of the equation. You would say, why would that woman think that if there's no other house selling in the neighborhood for that price point, that her house should be worth that price point? If this wasn't your house, you would be thinking that exact thing, and that's what lenders are trying to go back to, which is a lending standard, admittedly slightly too tough, but if you can't prove that other houses in the neighborhood are actually worth that price, they don't want to take the risk, because it's too much of a risk if we fall into another recession, that your house and there's six other foreclosures suddenly in the neighborhood next year because we've fallen back into a recession, one that I frankly think is coming, that they're going to take on that house and it's going to be underwater. And that's why they won't do it.
Okay.
I'm hearing a husband.
Yes, you are.
And he is asking a question about what, materials and how the material cost factors in?
Yeah, you know, that's the issue, because, you know, we've done a few of these the last few years. And once you get them to a certain point, you know, once you start changing HVAC, plumbing, electrical, you know, it costs money. And there's nothing cheap about it.
Of course not. Nobody's suggesting there is. But I'm saying, what is your name, sir?
Mark.
Mark. Mark, all I'm doing is saying that from a lender's point of view, you've redone your house. You've created a white elephant. Not maybe because the house next door is not worth $1 million and yours is worth $500,000. I don't know what the numbers are, but the fact that nothing else has sold, you've put your house too far out there. So unless you're willing to finance it yourself, nobody is going to be able to get a loan at the price point that you need to make money. That's all I'm saying. I'm sure your house is beautiful and you've done a bunch of these. Great, but you should know when you do these kinds of properties that the risk you're taking is that you're getting too far in front of the neighborhood. You want to flip it and make your money back. If you wait 2 or 3 years, it might catch up to you, and there will be more houses that sell in the neighborhood. But anybody else who sells in your block right now is facing the same problem, which is nothing else is selling at that price point. And so anybody else who's trying to get a loan on a house in a neighborhood that isn't selling at that price point is going to have the same trouble that you're having right now or that your buyers are having. And so I don't have a silver bullet for that. I don't have a solution to remake your neighborhood to the place that it should have been or was even 4 or 5 years ago or 10 or 12 years ago. You have to let time go by between what happened with those foreclosures and those short sales and what's going on right now. And until that all catches up, you're not going to have the kind of success that you want or even deserve. I'm not even talking about whether or not the house is worth it. Obviously, somebody thinks it's worth it. You've got two offers that are about at the same money. All I'm saying is that lenders can't prove that value, so they're not going to lend a dime. And you've got to figure out another way to unload that house that is going to make that back for you. And I don't really have an answer. Again, a portfolio lender might say, okay, I get what you've spent on this house, and maybe we can make a deal here if people are willing to put down 30-40%. But I don't know where you're going to get somebody who's putting down 30-40%. It's just how the world is working right now, and not very well. It's 11:50 on the Elise Klink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time. Starting with yours, I hope, here on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on anytime at ClarkHoward.com at midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter. Lively conversations going on right now. At Glink, at GLINK. Ann joins us on the line from Decatur. Hey, Ann, you also have a rental property, right?
Yes.
So what's going on with that?
The rental property has not been rented for a while. It's just sitting there. I'm paying the property taxes on it and the house insurance on it. And I don't really foresee it being rented just for the fact that it's out of town and I don't have the same time that I used to have to make sure, you know, what you have to do with rental property and to keep it rented. But I'm thinking because it's just been sitting there, how can it benefit me on my taxes?
Well, first of all, let's just talk about why you have this property that's out of town that's not getting rented. I mean,
okay. Why
are you keeping it?
I'm sort of trying to figure out that also. It was given to me, inherited from my grandmother.
When did you get it?
Oh, wow. It's been a while now. Not that it has never been rented. It has been rented. It generated money. It's just that at this time in my life, I can't do what it takes to keep it rented and the upkeep and make sure the rental people that are in it is just too much.
Okay, so then you have to sell it.
And it's in an area where it probably will not sell.
Everything sells at some price.
Okay.
I mean, there's nothing that doesn't sell. In fact, I just published a story this week. I think it was Friday, or maybe it'll be live on Monday. What you can buy for $45,000. People, I've published stories, what can you buy for $15,000? If this is a drain financially, you should sell this. If you're telling me, and I hear it in your voice, that you don't have the wherewithal, the imagination, the energy, the thinking power, whatever it is.
The time.
I mean, if you don't have that, right, part of getting your financial house in order, part of rebuilding your life, is getting rid of stuff that doesn't work.
Okay.
This house doesn't work for you, and there's no shame in that, even if it was a legacy from your grandmother. You have to separate out the emotional decisions. We talked about this earlier, right? My five steps for rebuilding America, rebuilding your life. One of them is make strategic decisions, not emotional ones. Holding onto a property that's dead weight around your neck is an emotional decision. It's a connection to your grandmother, and I understand that you don't want to let that go, but you're not honoring her memory by holding on to something that no longer works for your life. She gave you this so that you would improve your life.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And what you're doing is you're drowning with it.
Okay, so in the meantime, you know, if I put it on the market, but can it be used, like, as a tax on my taxes or not really? Because
no, when you sell it, it'll be a loss. It may be a loss or not. I mean, you inherited it. I assume there's no mortgage on it.
Right.
So every year that goes by, your loss is maintenance, upkeep, which you have to do, and the taxes. Now, you could hire a local firm to manage this property for you and pay them even one more, you know, one payment a month, one rental payment a month, and then another one is taxes, and then the rest is profit. Like, there's all kinds of stuff that you can do. But I want you to take the energy, whatever little energy you have left, I want you to find somebody to sell this property. I want you to get it sold this year. And then that will be the legacy from your grandmother. What you do with the money you get from selling this property will be the legacy. And you probably won't owe any taxes on this either, because it'll probably sell for what you either got it for or market value, and they're probably or maybe it's even less than what it was originally valued at. And so this will not be a tax liability over the long run. It will be a huge benefit. And when you've done it, call me back and we'll talk about how to honor your grandmother's memory with this legacy. It's 59 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkblink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
Hey, it's 12:06 on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. Here on News Talk WSB, our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, lively conversation online. Follow me online at Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, or at thinkglink.com. That's my website. 8,000, 10,000, I've lost count. Some number of thousand pages of information, all free, answering questions just like yours about buying, selling, fixing up financing, and at the bottom of it all, how do I rebuild my life? How do we rebuild my financial house, my small business, my actual house that I live in, just like yours? ThinkGlink.com. I am filling in for Eric Erickson on Tuesday, Atlanta's Evening News, 5 to 7. Be sure to join us. We're going to be talking about sequestration. This is the big week, folks. The numbers all come down. Are we going to kick that can down the road? Or are we going to actually face the pain now? And there will be pain. This is not going to be easy. Whatever happens, reducing the deficit, spending less, it's always painful. Tightening your belt, I've been talking about this for years. What does that mean? It means you cut stuff out. And when you cut stuff out on the global national level, people lose their jobs. And when people lose their jobs, they spend less, and then we go into recession. So this isn't going to be all fun and games. There is no easy way out. We sent our politicians to Washington to do a very tough job, and the question is, are they going to do it? So Tuesday when I fill in with for Eric Erickson, I'll be talking about that, taking your calls, Atlanta's Evening News, and of course we'll be bringing you all the news, weather, and traffic that you need to get through your evening commute. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. David joins us on the line in Auburn. Hey, David. Welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
Elise, thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can I help today?
I currently own a home and some property, and I'd like to sell that to my sister.
Okay.
This is part of a family plot, basically. Several of my sisters own property there. And I currently have a mortgage of about $59,000, and she's just going to buy this from me. So do I have to have an attorney, or how do I go through this process of paying off this mortgage and then signing over the deed to her?
So she's just going to give you a check for $59,000?
Yes.
To protect her, I would, and to protect yourself, I would hire a real estate attorney. Because even though it sounds incredibly simple, here is my check, David, for $59,000, and here you would say to your sister, here, sister, is my quit claim deed transferring any ownership interest that I have in this property to you. That's essentially the transaction that you're doing.
Right.
But you want to make sure you're giving her clean title. So you may want to, and I know you think you have clean title, and you may or you may not. She may want that, so you may want to get a title insurance policy. She
okay.
needs to then perfect the title. She needs to file paperwork with the local recorder of deeds office. I would suggest at a minimum that you would hire a title company to facilitate the transaction, because should anything happen that where things just don't get done exactly right, her heirs and their heirs, H-E-A-R-S, not E-R-R-O-R-S, although that word sounds exactly the same on the radio, could have problems down the line, and you just want to avoid that. Now, you could have it's really just about making sure there's no trouble down the line.
Okay. So, very good. I appreciate that very much.
And it's not outrageously expensive. And again, you could do this yourself, but I think you might want to hire an attorney for a few hours, if not it's an escrow company, to just make sure those details get closed up. Because when you have trouble with family members down the line, inheritances, siblings, nephews and nieces, it just messes up the whole family. And things get unsettled, and you just don't want that. If you love your sister and you want to give her this, you know, you're selling her this property, she wants to buy it, you just want to preserve the family. When you have bigger situations and family members start fighting, that's the time that you think to yourself, wow, I wish I had spent $500 to have this done the right way.
Now, if she and I discuss this, and we want to do it the simplest way possible without an attorney, and I'll leave that up to her, what would she do? Would I simply give her a payoff statement from my mortgage holder, and then she would issue a check to them?
She'd issue a check to you. You would want to make sure that you get the payoff amount, and then you have to actually pay that off very quickly, right? Again, this is why having a title company or an escrow company that can actually pay them electronically, like the same day, because every day that goes on, that number changes again. You also want to make sure that there aren't any outstanding water bills, that there aren't outstanding tax bills, that there's if there's a tax escrow, and I don't know if there is, or if you have to change the information with the tax assessor's office so that she starts getting the tax bills for the like there's lots of little details.
Right.
So you just want to make sure that none of those get overlooked in this payoff and then the transfer, the quitclaim deed. The actual transferring the deed with this quitclaim deed is not that big a deal. You just have to get it notarized. You sign it. It, you know, gets notarized. And then she literally will own the property. But you just want to make sure that you don't run afoul with your mortgage company, that gets paid off at the right moment.
So yeah,
I'm trying to keep it as simple as possible. There actually is some other, there are some other complexities. She owns property right next to me anyway. So this is really going to be an enhancement to her, what she already has. And I think that's one of the reasons why she was interested in buying it from me. I'm buying a new house. So it's going to, I think, be beneficial to both of us. And the property itself has been in my family since before the Depression. So I think the title search would be a good investment, and I think I'll follow your advice on that and go ahead and have a company look into that and take care of that for us, just to make sure.
I don't know why you wouldn't. For a very small amount of money, you can preserve the family, make sure that something that was in your family stays in your family, that there's nothing that could bubble up later on, that all the liens are satisfied, that whatever there is, you just make sure it gets taken care of the right way. And that's really all you ever want between siblings, right? You want good faith, and you want something taken care of the right way the first time. And then there's no bad feelings. There's just good feelings. It's like, oh, now I have, your sister's got to be thinking, I'm going to get this piece of property that's been in our family for almost 100 years, and I'm going to add it to mine, and my children are going to get that, and my grandchildren are going to get that. And you just want to preserve that. And so you do the right thing. It sounds like you're going to anyway, David. And just take care of it. And again, it's never about with family. Really, it's never, it should never be about the money. With family, it should always be about the family. And I see this in my own family right now, in a distant part of it, where, you know, verbal agreements didn't get translated into anything written. There was a misunderstanding. And now feelings are hurt. Feelings are hurt. My family's never had this. This is a distant, extended part of the family. But now we have to clean it up. And let me tell you, cleaning it up is a huge mountain that nobody wants to climb. Nobody. And that's how family breaks, the schisms start to happen. And why bother? For, you know, a few $100, you're just going to get professionals to take care of it. Your sister will greatly appreciate it. 404-872-0750. Len joins us on the line from Suwannee. Hey, Len.
Hey, how's it going?
Things are good. It's a good Sunday. What about with you?
Well, I called you up a couple of weeks ago with a great concern that I had with a refi I was doing on a second home, which was a condo. And in spite of the fact that there was a second home writer, there were two places in there where they were, where I was supposed to agree that I would occupy the property within 60 days.
Mm-hmm.
And you said just play dumb, go back to the bank and say there's got to be some mistake with this. So basically I marked up the document and faxed it back and said there's got to be a mistake. And they said, you're right.
Hey.
And, I sent it off to the attorney and never heard a peep back from them. And the loan has gone through and I've dropped 2 points off my mortgage.
That is a home run, if I've heard of one.
I don't know why they did it, but they agreed to do it, and so that's saving me a lot of money. So anyway, I just wanted to let you know that all's well that ends well, and that was certainly the proper thing to do.
I am really glad you called back, and it probably was hard to make that call and mark it up, but you know what? When something is that obvious, you know, cooler heads prevail, right? They, you know, it's like I told our caller, Lori, earlier today, you know, lenders really can only do what they're going to do in this box.
Mm-hmm.
And when you call their attention to something that's so obviously whacked out, they have to pay attention to it.
Well, and you said something at the very beginning of your show. You said, read everything before you sign. And had it not been a mail-in closing, I probably wouldn't have spent 2 hours on Saturday afternoon reading every page.
Mm.
So, you know, when you go to a closing and the attorney's sitting there staring down your face, you know, you might want to just let them stare.
That is, see, exactly. Because why would you? Those documents are absolutely intimidating, right? They're meant
absolutely.
To be. They don't want you really reading the fine print.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you that, you know, we've done maybe since 2001, I think Sam and I have done maybe 8 refinancings of our property, right? Maybe 7 or 8. I've lost count. And, you know, and that includes some of our rental properties, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I found mistakes in maybe half of them.
Wow.
And it's not even like on the 80th page, right? Like for you, it was, you know, the second home writer. I found mistakes right on page 1. I found a place where there was a quarter point inaccuracy in the interest rate, which I said to Sam, didn't you tell me that it was, you know, whatever it was, minus 0.25%? And he's like, yeah, wait, let me check that out. And he went back to the email that the lender had sent, and sure enough, right, it was a quarter point off. And he went to the lender, and he's like, hey, quarter point is a quarter point. And exactly. While we sat there for another 2 hours, they had to redo all those documents. And sure, it's a pain in the neck, but I'd rather it be right.
Absolutely. So. Can I make a comment on the sequester?
Of course.
Depending on where you look, the budget for 2013 is, I think, about $3,800 billion. And the sequester for 2013, that part is about $44 billion. So that's like 1.1%. So, you know, if you had a monthly budget in your home of $3,000 and you got hit with a sequester, then you'd have to reduce your spending next month by $33.
So it sounds
so it
like...
it seems like it's not a panic situation.
Right. So it seems like it's not a panic. The difference is, and I'll let's put this into a term that I think other people will understand. We had a payroll tax break in this country for a couple of years, and that ended in 2013. And for every $50,000 of income, it was about $1,000 out of your pocket that you were going to now have to pay back that you had been getting before. So very, very small amount of money, it seems like, right? $1,000 a year spread out over 12 months. How much is it really hurting you every month? Well, if you look at the economy, spending at places like Walmart, same-store sales, has been dramatically impacted. And their economists think that this is the reason, this payroll tax, this tiny change. And so the truth is, 50% of Americans right now, roughly, are living paycheck to paycheck. And even a $50 or an $80 change a week or a month is a huge change to them. Just like when gas prices go up over $4 a gallon, we see it dramatically impacting what's going on. This change in the payroll tax is making, you know, a really big difference for so many American families that Walmart is seeing it on its bottom line. Take that to the larger economy, and $33 a month could translate into 500,000 jobs across this country. And now you begin to see why it's so important that we're so carefully choosing where we're going to cut. We have to cut, but we have to raise revenue. There's no way we can do this on cutting alone. We have to raise revenue, and that's why everybody's fighting so hard. Len, thank you for filling us in. Great news. I'm so glad you got that refinance. It is a home run refinance if I ever saw one. 404-872-0750. This is the Elise Klink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find Elise Klink live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
It's 24:50. I'll just say 12:25 on the Elise Klink Show. Rebuilding America one house at a time. It's time for our WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack. The value today, $262. It includes a pair of weekly admission badges to the Greater Gwinnett PGA Tour Championship, April 15th through the 21st at TPC Sugarloaf, and a maintenance agreement for two complete HVAC tune-ups courtesy of Shoemate Air Conditioning and Heating. Those great prizes, if you're a golfer, man, that is terrific. $262, we're going to give it away to the fifth caller. Remember, you can only win once every 30 days. I wish it were a different story, but it's not. Call the prize pack line. Be the fifth caller, 404-741-0750. Be nice to Fred. He's the one taking your calls today. And good luck to you. Hope you win. It's 26 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. Rebuilding America one house at a time. I have to just go back for a moment to one of our prior callers. You know, Len, of course, just called in, and it's great to find out that lenders make mistakes, but yet you can actually call them on it, right? That's what happened. Len called a few weeks ago. There was a second home rider. It was really confusing. It didn't make any sense. Lenders make mistakes. Lenders also in the Great Recession, in the housing crisis, did things that weren't mistakes, that they meant to do, that harmed themselves, harmed you, harmed America. But sometimes there's just a logic error. Sometimes there's something that gets attached to the back and nobody pays attention, because guess what? Those loans are 80 pages long, and sometimes they get confused about what goes in. Reading every word, that is on my five things that you need to do to rebuild your own house, right? Getting yourself to ground zero, being honest with yourself about where you are, taking the pain now, don't defer. That's what we've been doing with our budget deficit in this country. We've been kicking that can down the road, and March 1st, that all ends. Make strategic decisions, not emotional ones. You've got to know where you want to get to. If you don't know where you want to get to, there is no way you're going to get there. You got to have a vision for yourself and your family and your house and your business. Whatever you buy, underbuy rather than overbuy. This is not about overpaying. This is about spending less than you can. And finally, and this is the one that Len got, don't sign until you read every word. Take the time. Make them look at you while you sit there at the closing table so that you are protecting yourself. You know what you're signing. You got to own that decision. I'm Elise Klink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours, and we'll be back to answer more of your questions next on News Talk WSB. Marianne and Wanda. 1235 on the Elise Klink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours here on News Talk WSB. Our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. All right, we got a whole bunch of people hanging on, so let's see if we can get some questions answered. Brian joins us on the line from Gainesville. Hey, Brian.
How are you?
You know, I'm doing fine, thanks. How's your Sunday going?
It's going pretty good. I got some unwanted news, but I was calling up just to kind of see what your opinion was on the matter.
Well, what is unwanted news? What does that look like?
Well, we were looking at houses. We're my wife and I are first-time house buyers. So we found a house. We had put a couple offers. We went back and forth. And so we're binding as of Friday. And so we've done pretty much every search you could on the area, everything. The only thing we didn't do was an aerial map photo. Well, we were looking at it today and realized that there is a landfill that is literally 500 meters from our front door, behind the woods behind us. And we were just concerned as to, I mean, the house is beautiful, we love it, but if it's something that's going to really devalue the homes around it, and I haven't found any data around any complaints or any issues, but I've heard that it can really drop the value of the home, and we were considering, you know, maybe as an option that, you know, maybe if we walked away from the contract, we would lose a $5,000 non-refundable deposit, but in the long run, it may be worth, you know, trying to resell a home that's 500 meters from a landfill.
So you're doing exactly what I recommend in my book, 100 Questions Every First-Time Home Buyer Should Ask, which is thinking about how difficult it will be to sell this home before you've even bought it. Your mistake was, of course, not thinking about that before you even made an offer, which is really what I recommend. But at least you're doing it before you closed. Now, the problem you're having is that you didn't do the aerial photo. You didn't ask this question. And this is public knowledge, public information. It's not like you could say the seller was hiding it.
Right.
So if you're having second thoughts, the question is, how much did you put as a good, you know, good faith deposit, earnest money, and are you willing to walk away from that?
Yeah, I mean, the earnest money that we put down was $5,000. It's non-refundable. I think maybe we would have some wiggle room, seeing how it literally we were binding as of Friday. So we're talking about a three-day difference to walk. So the house wasn't actually off the market for very long, so maybe that would help. But realistically, it's something that we would have to consider.
Are you getting it at a great deal? Is the house going to appraise out in value, or are you going to have trouble like Lori getting the house, getting it appraised at the price you're paying?
You know, that is one of the questions. We've certainly negotiated an appraisal contingency. It was not originally in there. It is a good deal. I mean, it definitely is. But, I mean, it's a it's a very high, I mean, I don't say very high price, but I mean, it's a over $200,000 home, so it's definitely, the amount of money that we'd be investing. I'd be okay with walking away with a $5,000 loss if I felt that that would be the case. You know, do they take into consideration an appraisal value being so close to a landfill?
They should. And if the appraiser, but that's not as big a deal as what are the prices that everything else is selling for in the neighborhood.
Yeah, and, well, we've checked the comps. That's the question. You know, we checked the comparable houses in the area and researched all of that, and it's a great, extremely good value. I mean, the houses are selling for probably 20% above without a basement, and we have a full basement. So it really is a great deal. And
so then you're not risking anything, right? Because if homes are already selling, I don't know why is this home selling for so little when everything else is selling for 20% above and you've got a basement and they don't.
Well, we know the lots were foreclosed beforehand. So the buyer who came in, the builder, had bought the lots at an extremely discounted rate.
Uh-huh.
So it brought the average cost to build around $80 a square foot.
And nobody else in the neighborhood is going to be, they're either going to be thrilled that you're buying this home so it's off the market and they can start to rebuild their own value.
Correct.
But, you know, or they're not going to be thrilled that you're buying at such a low price. But in any case, it sounds to me like the property is a great deal. So whether you have, you know, a landfill 500 meters, the risk you take, honestly, is that that landfill leaks or ends up having something that you don't know about inside of it, right? So if the landfill goes toxic and all the neighborhood gets infected by that, your house will be worthless. That is the risk you're taking. But if it's just a landfill and the landfill is fine, it's fine for another 100 years, you'll be long out of that house. But that's the risk you take. And we've had calls on this show from people who have had exactly that happen. But I know there are a lot of people who live next to a landfill where that doesn't happen. Personally, if you read my book, you know that I chose not to buy a house that was about the same distance, maybe a little bit more, from a landfill because I didn't want to take that risk. But I also wasn't going to buy that house at a 20% discount or even bigger, 25% discount, as you are. So the risk may be that if, you know, all the other houses in the neighborhood are going for $250, $275, that you've built in that risk. But I can't answer that for you.
Sure.
You have to decide what's going to allow you to sleep at night. And if this is a big enough discount and you could turn around in 6 months and sell this house for more or rent it out and move somewhere else, great. Good for you.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I you know, if you want to if you're not afraid to walk away from $5,000 because you think that there could be a problem with this landfill, I don't know what would give you that idea, but you think there could be, and you just don't want to take that risk, walk away. It's $5,000. They'll sell this house to somebody else.
Right. Okay.
What will let you, the question you have to ask is what will let you and your spouse or partner sleep at night? What is the decision that you are able to live with? That's what you have to decide. 404-872-0750. Daniel joins us on the line. Hey, Daniel.
Hello.
What's going on?
Well, I have a quick question, I hope. I hope it's also in your category. You tend to go with more of the financial, from my understanding, but with your experience in real estate, I'm hoping you might be able to help me out a bit. I have put down the basic to start the contract for getting a house built. It was the last lot from a development. So, of course, everything already has a house on it or has had at least the foundation for it as they're building. And it turns out that the lot that they've given or the amount that's been allotted is with all of the easements included for the the sidewalk that wraps around, because it's a corner lot that wraps around on both street edges, as well as the fire hydrant and the house to try to fit it all on the same lot. Apparently, it all doesn't quite fit with all the easements, and they're having to get variance approved. Now, my question is,
Are those variants usually considered permanent, or are those temporary? And if so, should I try and get an amendment added to the contract so that any variants that are going to be subsequently added have to come with a permanent and transferable option so that I'm not stuck with a house that, the moment I sell it, is outside of its legal limits?
So you're asking some of the right questions, Daniel, but not all of the right questions.
Ooh, okay.
So the real question is, if you're getting a short lot, a smaller lot, are you spending too much money for that lot?
I was taking a look at what was being sold in the area for the other houses, the other lots. I am getting one of the cheapest prices in comparison, you know, using Zillow, et cetera, for checking the price.
Zillow's useless. Zillow is useless. Zillow is,
okay.
They call it a Zestimate. That word is a Z on top of guesstimate, right? You
fair
really
enough.
Need to know what everybody else paid for their lots, and then you have to figure out if you're getting enough of a discount for a short lot. Because and again, this is the same thing I just said to Brian, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to think about how difficult it's going to be to sell this house before you buy it, right? You are buying now a lot that's too small. So is somebody else going to want to pay you full price for a lot that's too small? And if not, are you getting enough of a discount that they have to actually get a variance to even be able to build this house? What if they don't get the variance?
Well, if they don't get the variance, then they can't build.
Exactly. So now they're going to get a variance, but now your lot is X percent smaller than it should be. Is the price, which was the cheapest anyway, is that enough of a discount? That's the question you have to ask yourself. Because going forward, the next buyer who comes after you is going to say, well, this is like the smallest house by far. Why wouldn't I buy a house priced almost at exactly the same price, but with 30% more land?
That is fair. I do know that they had been, the developer had begun the process with all advertising being from the 170s, and by the time we got into it, it was down in the 150s. They did drop the price for that small lot, so I have it based off of their advertising, what they initially were quoting, to be a lower price. But I'll be honest, unless I go, what is my other option for finding out the pricing of the other sales without... I mean, do I just walk up to the other neighbors and say, hey, how much you pay?
Well, you can go. All those prices are recorded at the local recorder of deeds office. You may even be able to get that online. Depends on where you are in your county. But you should search online first, and then if not, you can go to the local recorder of deeds. You can have the addresses of everybody in the neighborhood, and you can go look it up.
Huh.
Literally look it up, house by house by house.
Well, that sounds great.
So if I were you, the calculus that you're trying to get, right, and again, strategic versus emotional,
yeah.
Maybe this is the best neighborhood ever, and this is in the best school district, and this is exactly where you want to be, and it's the last property, and maybe because they're desperate to get out of it, you're going to be able to get an even better deal. Maybe 140 is the right lot price instead of 150. I don't know. But you have to understand what the calculus is so that you make a strategic decision, right? That's point number three on my list. Make strategic decisions, not emotional decisions. And you have to understand what it is that you want them to do for you now that they have to get the variance. It's fine to put in that the variance has to be permanent, but that kind of goes without saying. It's not the real issue. And then I'm just going to say this, even though attorneys are not normally used to close residential deals, you've already got special considerations, and you should find a real estate attorney to look at it and make sure, because I'm not a real estate attorney, make sure that there isn't anything else that you could be doing to protect yourself. Because easements are just that, right? Easements are the ability for some other company to come on your land and do something without your permission. Understand what those easements are and what that's going to cost you, and you may decide that this is the right property or not. But what I want you to do is make a decision that actually is the right decision for you. It's a strategic long-term decision. You build a house, it's a year to build that house, or 9 months to build that house. You're going to live there for the next 5 to 10 years or longer. I want you to be happy with that decision. When you're happy with what you have, then you're satisfied, you're content. You don't have to be happy with what everybody else has, right? If you're always looking to what your neighbors have, you're never going to be happy. So I want you to understand what it is you're giving up with buying a short lot so that you understand you're actually paying the right price, you're getting it for the, what you should be getting it for, you're getting every dollar of fair value, and maybe $150 is that value. Maybe that is the right price. But I want you to make sure so that when that deal is done, you're protected and you're content. And that's how you rebuild your house as we rebuild America. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. We are rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more on News Talk WSB.
To let go.
It's 12:55 on the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. Tuesday, I'm going to be filling in for Eric Erickson, 5 to 7 for Atlanta's Evening News. Join me then. We're going to be talking about sequestration. What a weird word that is. Hopefully there'll be some other insights beyond just how weird the terminology is. Hope that you will do that. Follow me on Twitter. I'll be tweeting during that show, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Want to make sure we get to all of your calls on Tuesday, if we can, as we sort of voice our thoughts about how the government is going to fix this problem and hopefully not just kick it down the can again. 404-872-0750, online, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Pamela joins us on the line from Covington. So, Pamela, you have moved into a development or you bought a new home?
We just purchased a new home 2 months ago.
Okay, congratulations.
Thank you. And there are about 12 homes within the subdivision, and we're all homeowners. Within 2 months, they have built 6 new homes, and it took at least 6 months to build our home because we built it from the ground up. On Monday, on my way to work, I saw 2 signs in the yard that states rent.
To rent the new houses?
Yes. The, the investor has come in and purchased 6 brand new homes, and he is putting them all up for rent.
Okay.
And the homeowners are devastated. One of the reasons is because statistics shows that renters don't take care of their homes like homeowners do.
Mm-hmm.
It was never stated to us as homeowners that an investor will come in and eventually rent the homes out. I've gone on to the website to see exactly who the investors are. They have the application, and the application also states Section 8.
Okay, and so Section 8 is obviously a concern for you. But there are no guarantees. That may or may not have been something that they needed to disclose. You and the other homeowners will need to talk to a real estate attorney to see if you have any legal options. But I'm guessing you don't. And this is something that could come back to haunt you for years to come. But getting on it now is going to at least tell you what you're facing, as opposed to leaving it just sort of lie there. You don't want to do that. Talk to an attorney, talk to the other homeowners, and call me back and let me know what's going on. And for everybody else holding, I'm sorry we're not going to get to you, but our time is up. You can hear the music. So join me on Tuesday when I fill in for Eric Erickson. In the meantime, work on rebuilding America, your house. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned for what's coming up next here on News Talk WSB. Have a great week.